STEM jobs account for some of the highest paid jobs in today's economy, but women are underrepresented in the field and they tend to make less money than men for doing the exact same work. That's not particular to tech jobs, of course, but it's, you know, and for all its utopian vision, the tech world is not immune. But Kansas City appears to be making strides in leveling that playing field. For the fourth consecutive year in a row, Smart Asset has ranked Kansas City second in the nation on its list of the best places for women in tech careers. Second in the nation, outperforming progressive tech oases like Austin and San Francisco, and not just by a little bit. Those cities don't even make the top 15. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on KCUR's Central Standard, we're going to get a better understanding of that ranking, and we'll also find out whether women who work in the local tech scene actually experience it that way. Let's start with Christine McWiggin of Silicon Prairie News. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Gina.
So when you dig into these rankings from Smart Asset, what's your sense of why Kansas City stands out?
From my experience, having conversations with both male and female tech entrepreneurs and startup founders, what I see is that in the Midwest, there's a different attitude towards inclusivity as far as gender. It's a little friendlier. It's a little bit more welcoming than you might see in, your typical Silicon Valley-esque ecosystems.
What does that look like? A friendlier tech community for women?
Yeah, I think that, one of the most notorious aspects of Silicon Valley is sort of this prevalence of bro culture, where women are faced with some additional challenges as far as receiving funding or getting in on the ground floor of developing businesses. And I think
help me understand this bro culture thing a little bit better.
So bro culture, it's a very, there's been some articles. There was, I think, a Vanity Fair article that was particularly scathing as far as what Silicon Valley looks like on the inside, where, founders and tech entrepreneurs are attending these parties that are very not women friendly, where, venture capitalists are sitting in hot tubs talking to, men and, perhaps, these sort of model-esque women who are not there to receive funding, but who are invited as guests to the parties. And so women are kind of put into this position where, do I stay true to myself? Do I play along? It's just kind of, it's an environment that's not particularly welcoming to women.
So the Midwest is not like that?
From my experience, no. I think that you might find some particular cases where perhaps women have experienced something different. But from the women I've spoken to, especially those from Kansas City, they feel that there's a different atmosphere. It's a lot more inviting. They attend startup events and networking events, and they see other women and other, people of diverse backgrounds, and they're invited in. They're given a seat at the table to participate in the discussions and to have access to the same resources that their male counterparts have.
Smart Asset has these criteria that they use to evaluate cities in terms of how good it is for women to work in them. And some of the criteria they use, it looks like women's pay when compared to men's pay is relatively high in Kansas City's tech scene. And I don't think that means it's equal, but just the pay gap is smaller.
Right.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure as far as each individual ecosystem what pay actually looks like and the opportunities women are receiving. But I think when you look at these numbers, you're seeing there's equal value placed on male and female employees, which I think is at the heart of this is what women are asking for. They're asking for equal opportunity and an equal position within their companies. And, that equal position leads to things like work satisfaction and a desire to seek higher positions within the company.
The study does make note that Kansas City's tech scene is less dynamic overall than the number one city, Washington, D.C., and they cite low rates of job growth in making that assessment. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about whether it's problematic to you that one of the best cities for women to have an equal shot is also a place where maybe everyone's chances are a little lower just due to that the amount of new opportunity.
Right. When you look at cities around the Midwest, you know, at Silicon Prairie News, we focus a lot on, Kansas City, Omaha, Lincoln, St. Louis, Iowa City. These cities don't have the same density of tech talent that cities like Washington, D.C. have. And that's just based around the fact that we are smaller cities. And so perhaps we do have a smaller growth. I don't think smaller growth means that it's a weak ecosystem or that it doesn't provide ample opportunity. I think it's just kind of a reflection of, you know, our cities and the way they grow in general, not just in regards to tech development.
So other than the relative size of the gender pay gap and the kind of, I don't know, interpersonal dynamics and just how people relate to one another in the tech scene, how would you measure how good things really are for women in tech in a particular city?
I think, you know, I guess my experience and my evidence is a little bit more anecdotal. I speak to women on an individual basis, and I talk to them personally about their experiences. So, you know, as a whole, I think that these experiences are, you know, just kind of a reflection of Midwest values and the focuses of the ecosystem.
Well, Christine McGuigan, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Gina.
Christine is a writer and editor for Silicon Prairie News, and she's been talking to us about Kansas City's second place ranking on a list of the best cities for women in tech. That's a ranking that we have earned and kept for 4 years in a row. Now let's talk to Jennifer Wadella. She runs an organization called Kansas City Women in Technology. And Jennifer, I am guessing that there is something that created for you this need to start an organization for women in technology here in town.
Absolutely. I was working at a bigger company, and probably the ratio were about 60 men in my role to one or two women. And so there was a definite need there. The guys I worked with were amazing, but there were some ways we couldn't relate. And so I really wanted to help create a source of solidarity for women and help women who are such minorities connect. And so that was kind of the foundation of launching Kansas City Women in Technology.
When was this?
This was in 2013.
So not too long ago.
Nope. We're going to have our fifth anniversary birthday party in July. So,
but do you feel like anything has changed in the local ecosystem in those 5 years?
Absolutely. It's really taken off like wildfire since about 2017. And we see that in our program selling out. But I think the biggest thing that I've seen is we were at the Kansas City Developer Conference, which is our big conference in town. And last year, we kind of had all the women hanging out, and there were big groups together. And a couple of us who've been attending for years and who are familiar with going to tech conferences were like, wow, this was the first year that I didn't feel like such a scathing minority. And so I think building the community and bringing women together and connecting them has helped, grow the numbers, help support each other, and help make it feel stronger in our presence.
What do you think of as some of maybe the best things Kansas City has going for it in terms of gender in the tech scene? We'll get to the other side of it in a moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think culture is a big part of it. Obviously, in society, women have certain expectations of the way they need to be managing a family and a household. And I think because in the Midwest, we see people settling down and having families, we don't experience as much of that bro culture of, 20-something males crushing Red Bull and coding for 20 hours a day. We don't have as much of that in our culture. And so that makes it more feasible for women to have flex time and be managing their household duties in at the same time pursuing a really fulfilling tech job.
So wait, are you kind of saying that men here and women here just behave differently overall?
Absolutely, I think so. Because the problem with bro culture is if you've got those couple people who are the quote-unquote rock star developers just like crushing code 20 hours a day, that's not feasible for everybody, but it sets bizarre standard and kind of starts a very bad dynamic that leads to burnout and a lot of things. And
just
so I don't...
weeding people out at certain stages in their lives.
Yeah, and not everybody can do that either. And so I think we see a lot less of that in the Kansas City area.
What do you think are the biggest challenges we still need to overcome to really level that playing field, though?
To level the playing field, I think the more open conversations we have, the better. I know employers get frustrated because they do make an effort on wanting to hire more women in technology, but they're only looking for senior level women. And I think we need to make sure that we're changing the narrative to say, okay, we need to support pipeline growth and getting women in at any state of their tech career if we really want the scene to grow robustly. And then from there, just making sure that employers are continuing to grow and treat people well and provide ample job opportunities for people throughout their different career needs.
So for you, I mean, comparing not just looking at your own experience, but having started this organization for women in tech locally, what do you see as the general mood? I mean, do people seem to have this same perception of Kansas City being a really good place to be doing this?
I think so. And I think we're kind of proud that we have such amazing things to offer, but we're still kind of under the radar. So we can get into a restaurant in town and be seated in like 5 minutes versus like when I see my girlfriends in tech in San Francisco tweeting about their 45-minute dinner wait. So I think we have a lot of amazing things going on that people live here, know it, and they live it and breathe it, but that the rest of the country may not have caught on to yet.
What about this whole brogramming idea? I mean, this is a word that I just learned getting ready for this show, and I'm curious whether you think it's a part of tech culture more broadly and whether you see signs of it in Kansas City.
It's absolutely everywhere. And I've got a couple interesting theories on this. I think a lot of coders and engineers and technologists kind of grew up with those nerdy interests and maybe being bullied or picked on by more alpha people in school. And now in the tech industry, knowledge is currency, intelligence is currency. And so part of
techies are the new lifeguards.
Yeah. And so like part of their way to like pay it back, like societally, is to enforce how smart and intelligent they are. And I think that can lead to some of the programmer culture. And that being said, just being a young white male with no responsibilities, nothing else to do other than code for 22 hours a day helps perpetuate that.
Explain that a little bit more. I mean, is that about just a relationship between a person and technology versus a person and everything else, or are you getting at some other thing?
I think a lot of younger people haven't learned to balance their lives yet and understand the importance there. And so they feel like their only way to be successful is to like really go hard at work, not realizing that's going to lead to burnout. But it's also setting unfair standards for everybody else who has maybe made that gap of work-life balance. So,
well, hang on, because in just a minute, we are going to get right back to this conversation. We will hear from a woman who's the CEO of her company to hear how she's treated, and a techie in Kansas City who works remotely for companies based in New York. If you have an experience or observation to share, call 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. We're back. This is KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're discussing Kansas City's insanely high rankings year after year on this list of good cities for women to be working in tech. And we've been hearing why that is. We've covered things from a relative lack of bro culture to a pretty high comparative pay scale for women in tech compared with other cities. But now let's hear how the data holds up when it comes to personal experience. Annie Sykes, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Gina.
How long have you worked in tech?
About 4 years now.
What drew you to the field?
Initially, I was looking for something that I thought would be interesting, a field where I'd be able to continue to learn. And also, it's high paying and it's in demand. So those were some of the many things that drew me in.
And so you initially got involved in New York, right?
I did. Yeah, that's where I first got started. I learned to code about 4.5 years ago, started as an intern Which led to a full-time position. And then I moved recently, about 2 years ago, to another company called Flashpoint that's also based in New York.
Getting into it, did you have questions about whether gender would be an obstacle in the field? Or no, you just went in fearlessly with no thought of such things?
You know, I would say I didn't consider it very much when I was getting into it. I kind of thought, this is interesting. Let me try it out and just kind of went for it.
So you moved from New York to Kansas City not too long ago, but you're still connected to New York's tech scene, right?
Yes. Yeah. The company I'm with is in New York. And so and I've been out back to visit a couple of times since we moved about a year and a half ago.
So how would you compare the culture in our tech scene to what you've experienced or observed in your East Coast business dealings?
Well, I was very excited to move to Kansas City, not only because my family's here, but also I knew about the Kansas City Women in Tech organization. So that was a big draw, was meeting other people that had similar interests. And it's a small enough town that I think that made a big difference for me, being able to connect with other people. New York's, it's a really big ecosystem. So you could go to these meetups and meet other people, and then you'll never see them again. If you go to an event in Kansas City and then you go to another event, you're probably going to see the same people and really establish a connection that creates, I think, a more supportive environment.
And there are people who you might be likely to run into as you progress in your career and...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then you also, well, with technology today, you have ways to communicate through something like Slack. You can chat with people off, outside of being in person with them. And so it's like a whole nother resource of supportive people that will offer tips, or maybe they've encountered a similar problem in their career or on just a specific coding issue or something, and they're there to help with that.
What's a kind of issue that you've seen someone dealing with where having that connection really like helped resolve it?
Well, I've seen and heard people chatting about, you know, like something like, hey, I'm running into this interpersonal issue I'm struggling with in a meeting today. I brought this up and somebody said this and I wasn't sure how to approach it. And then you have a bunch of women that are able to chime in and say, hey, I ran into that same problem a few months ago. Here's what I did. Or check out this book. This reminds me of this article. And it helps you know you're not alone if you've hit a struggle, something like that. So it's fun to watch that. And it's fun to see the community work in that way.
Are there things you've encountered in New York's tech scene that you have not found to be like problems, I guess, that you have mm-hmm. found to not be problems here?
You know, I haven't. Well, I have not actually worked in Kansas City's tech scene, so I can't, since my company's based
right,
in New
sense.
York. Yeah. I would say I am very thankful in that my experience in New York has been largely positive. My current company has been really flexible with me, allowing me to work remotely and offering good maternity leave benefits and helping me ease back in. I've been at a company previous to this one where I did struggle when around salary negotiations. And when I brought that up about 3 years ago or so, it was approached as, you know, it went from, oh, you're, you know, we love your contributions, but you're not being very nice. And it turned into, as I was trying to keep it professional, it turned into more of an emotional, it was turned and held against me, which actually led to me looking for another position. So,
thinking about just what it takes to advance in a career, that includes something like being able to negotiate a salary.
Mm-hmm.
That also includes more training, more skill development, more education. And I'm wondering if you feel like Kansas City is the kind of place where you can get the new skills that are in demand, the ones that your peers aren't, who are still living in New York or getting, that kind of thing.
I do think you can. I do notice, I think New York's at an advantage. I see my coworkers have access to, like Google will be holding some training workshop about some new thing that they're developing, and they're able to walk down the street and attend an evening after work. And so sometimes I feel slightly jealous that I'm missing out on those kinds of things. But I think what Kansas City lacks in that area, it makes up for in just the really active community and the ease of connecting to other people?
Well, thinking about not just getting started, but really advancing in your field, we've also brought in a tech CEO, Neelima Parasker. She's the CEO of Snapit Solutions, or Snap IT Solutions. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Gina.
So tell me the story of how you got where you are in tech.
Well, I started my journey back in 2000, so it's been a while. Coming out of my master's in computer sciences, I started with being a developer. And got into being a designer and really established myself in both the fields, especially in the design and analyst field. The reason I got into design is when my manager at that point said, okay, we need to look at heading a project that entirely wipes out a billing system and replaces it with a new system. They picked 7 people out of the entire company to do this. The reason they picked me was I had both backgrounds. I mean, I had coding background, but he thought I was good at communicating and finding that bridge between design team and the developers team to be able to bring in that knowledge. Being in on that project really gave me a holistic view of the systems, applications, you know, designing and understanding business, and also knowing development and coding standards gave me a perspective that led me to come out of just being a developer or a coder and looking at the bigger picture. That's how I started my career.
Has there ever been a moment? We'll talk about your experience as a CEO and the position you're in right now just shortly, but the path getting there, did you ever have moments where you felt like gender might be putting you at a disadvantage or no concerns about that?
Of course, there would be some situations where, you know, you feel like, especially which is not concerning your work, you know, outside the work, you may be in a situation where, oh, let's go for late night drink or, you know, after the work is done, right?
Sort of informal networking.
Yeah. But I was mentored to know that that's not something against women, but it's a part of being in the team. And if you're working 22 hours a day, then it becomes, we need a break. So finding a balance between and being confident that being in that situation doesn't undermine my, you know, being a woman or anything like that, and being participating in that activity only makes the other people in the group not see me as a woman, but as a team member.
So when you talk about that you were mentored to know that, were you mentored by a woman?
Both women and male. Men.
Do you think that's important?
Yes, absolutely.
Tell me more about that.
I've always been supported by women and men, but at different situations. I would say as a father, I've seen my dad, you know, bring me up to meetings where, you know, he was with his clients and I was just 15, 16-year-old girl sitting there listening in to those meetings. And as growing up, I saw my mother run their company. And it was not something that I took that only men or women can mentor me. And, you know, my husband is a very good mentor as well. He has taught me not to refrain from being in a team meeting just because of me being a woman or things like that. But then later on in life, I found other great mentors in women as well.
You know, I want to quickly turn to Jennifer Wadella about this. Is it your sense, just from working with a lot of women in tech in Kansas City, that finding male mentors and female mentors is something that young women getting their start have a relatively easy time doing?
I think so. For me, one of my most powerful mentors has been like a male who hired me and has been really instrumental in my career. But one of the cool things is I didn't have a lot of female mentor options when I was at certain places to choose from.
Just because that had women hadn't quite made it there yet.
Because the numbers aren't in our favor. That being said, one of the programs we run called Coding in Cocktails is teaching women front-end development coding skills. And we have all female mentors in the room. And we've grown that so much that we have to waitlist mentors every month because there are that many women getting in to try and mentor other women. And the really cool feedback we get from women who attend this program is how powerful it is to be in a room full of just women talking tech. And so I'm really proud that our community has been able to create something that maybe wasn't readily available for myself as a younger technologist 5 years ago.
So Neelima, you know, as CEO of your company, when you walk into a meeting in Kansas City, I'm curious, you know, if our tech ecosystem treats you with the same respect and reverence that you think a male CEO typically gets.
Working in a corporate life, I never experienced that. But coming into managing my company, I did have situations where people were expecting more people to join the conversation.
Yeah, like waiting for a guy to arrive?
Yeah. But those meetings were even fun when we went through the conversation and pretty much closed the deal, you know?
So you could get over, it was a hump, but one you could get over?
Yeah, easily.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, as far as someone running a company, how do you make sure that your company is a place where the women that you work with or who you do business with, who you employ, are also getting a fair shot, are being well taken care of by the company?
So, yes. Within my company at this point, we have two women other than I.
How big is the company?
It's about 8 to 9 people. But the way I look at them, women or men, is based on their personalities and their strengths and their passion to do what they want to do. So I have a designer who loves to design and bring in a perspective of changing a system to have a user interface better, right? And then I have a developer who is a female. Right now she is in Linwood Y teaching younger kids, because they're on a spring break, how to code. You know, things like that. And she is an amazing developer. And we've trained her and seen her grow and catch up in technology. She went from learning Java to JavaScript, Angular. These are the things that we don't really restrict or promote just because you're a woman.
I'm curious, how do you think that there are ways that Kansas City could still do better for women in tech?
Yes. Not only just Kansas City, but I have this notion of, when a technology company hires a woman, they're probably thinking they'll have a downtime with the women going through pregnancies and stuff like that. So yes, you can go have kids, babies, and then that's a downtime. But there are ways that companies can put other benefits or incentives where men are given time off for taking care of the kid if the kid is sick. You know, these are the things that we can promote as not only in Kansas City, but in the United States or in the world.
To promote just a balance between men and women and work, family kind of stuff.
Exactly.
What else? Any other ideas for Kansas City?
Kansas City in particular, we have many things that are not to our, you know, to our pros, but we have things that we have an opportunity to build a stronger community. I've heard both the ladies here talk about culture. We have a good culture. We don't have, aspects that would tear apart our families just to improve in career growth.
Our time for this discussion is up, but Neelima, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Annie Sykes, Jennifer Wadella, thank you both as well.
Thank you.
Up next, a mother-son duo wishes childhood goodbye with their new single. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this is KCUR Central Standard. Stay tuned. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we're about to talk about a new single from Madison Ward and the Mama Bear, a Kansas City band with a national audience. The song is called Childhood Goodbye. Let's give it a listen.
Walk this earth till this curse won't come back again. Be my road, be my home, my bad weather friend. Walk this earth till this curse won't come back again. Oh, child, goodbye, childhood, goodbye.
Madison Ward and the Mama Bear are here with me in the studio. Madison is the vocalist you've been hearing. Madison, good morning.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for being here. And the Mama Bear is actually Madison's mom, Ruth Ward. She's playing the guitar in this song, right, Ruth?
That's right. Hello.
Hi. So you guys have talked with KCUR before, and you've talked about how you came to be a mother-son duo making music on the national stage. We'll touch on some of that a little more, but this new single about letting go of childhood, that seems especially poignant for a mother and son.
Well, I never thought of it so much that way, but yes, I guess you got a point there. Yeah.
Yeah, we sort of just played around with different themes and topics, and that for some reason that was one that came out. You never always know what's going to come out of a writer's room or what sort of topics you're going to touch on, but it felt sort of profound and very anthem-y, and it was, yeah, just something we decided to tackle.
It does sound very anthem-y. Like, when you talk about that it seemed profound, can you tell me more about that?
Well, just that idea of, like, letting go of childhood and really, you know, growing into yourself and becoming who you are, and how you start to realize that even though you have to let go, those experiences really shape a big part of who you become.
Right.
When you're an adult, and so in a way you don't really let go. So you say goodbye, but it's very, it's not necessarily permanent.
Right, I agree, it's not necessarily permanent. I think there's things in my childhood that I still carry with me today. I just don't let them rule my life. You know, just different things that happen when you're growing up. And I think as you become an adult, you become a lot more mature instead of immature.
It's funny that you say that, because when I think about a mother-son duo, I just think about how no matter how much I personally mature, like, I feel like the second I am back around my mom, I'm a little more like a 15-year-old.
I can rest assured Madison is not that way. He's very mature, and I don't have that kind of pool with him, I guess. I wish I did.
there's a different dynamic that I tell people a lot with my mom and I, just with her being a musician and an artist from a very young age. And yeah, we're mother and son, but the dynamic is a little different. And when we're out on the road with whether it be our tour manager or bandmates, they sometimes tell us that they forget that we're related often. So I don't. So I try not to go back to that 15-year-old version of myself. But I don't know. I guess it's up to other people to decide.
You know, Ruth, do you remember the first musical inklings of your son? Do you remember witnessing those?
Oh yes. He really. We gave him a guitar, and he didn't pick it up at first. But and I knew that it, because I have two other children, and I thought maybe one would play the guitar like I did. But after a little while, he did pick it up, and I started listening to him practice, and I practiced with him. And then I told him, I said, most important, when you learn to play, you have to also sing and play at the same time. And I told him, and then he started writing songs, because he was very good with words. And so when he started putting the words to the melodies and writing, I knew he was gifted, yeah,
Do you remember one of your first songs where you put together words and melodies and maybe how your mom was a little bit involved with that?
I do remember one of the first ones. I don't know, she wasn't too involved, but I remember writing a tune and bringing it to her, and it was all about how falling in love with a girl but not being able to afford to take her out to
great
dinner or anything. And
how old were you?
I wasn't that young, because I really started kind of late as far as songwriting. So I want to say I was in mid high school or something like that. But but I just remember it was like, excuse me, miss, I don't mean to be rude, but you and me spells Chinese food. People say I'm a goody two shoes, but all I really want is a little bit of mooshu pork on the tip of my fork. So yeah, that was that song.
I love it.
And it was just ridiculous, and I used to love the idea of making the most ridiculous music I could. And yeah, she loved it. She was like, go play it at the coffee shop. So we did.
You know, Ruth, tell us more about how you got started in music, because your musical background had already been going for a while when you listening to your songs.
Ever since I was young, that childhood we talk about, I loved music. And I loved all kinds of music. I'm a very eclectic person when it comes to music. And when I was 19 years old, I had a friend that was playing the guitar, and I just said, "Hey, play the guitar, and let me put words to the melody." And I thought, "Man, I should do this for myself." So I asked this guy. I said, "Would you mind teaching me how to play the guitar?" So he tried to teach me the G chord, and the G chord was very difficult. He said, "Ruth, you'll never learn to play."
Whoa! How old were you?
I was 19.
You know, I had a friend hand me a guitar at that age, and I didn't pick one back up much. But what's sort of odd, I think, if you don't grow up doing that, is just there is a certain awkwardness, at least I felt it, in holding this big thing. Did you feel that?
No, I knew I wanted to learn to play. And I taught myself, and I had my little techniques that I used. And then I started doing what I told him. I started writing melodies and words all at the same time. And it just developed. And then I started singing in coffee houses and quite a bit. And so in other places as well. But
I've heard you call yourself a hippie.
Really? I said that?
I may have called you that.
Oh.
or coming from that, at least coming from that era.
I like the word counterculture, more so than hippie, you know. But
that's
anyway,
what hippies call themselves. Counterculturalists.
Anyway.
Tell me more about, though, the coffee shop scene where you came up. I'm curious how it compares to the one that your son came
up in. Well, I just enjoyed singing in the coffee houses, and I had a lot of friends and other musicians, and it was just part of who I was. And I also like being in control over my destiny. If I didn't feel like playing that week, I didn't have to play. But as Madison started playing, I would sing in the coffee houses, and I heard talent. And so I'd say, "Hey, why don't you come out and maybe play during my break?" And then all of a sudden, he would be at home, and we'd practice stuff together, and then we started doing it together, and it just evolved. It was a serious evolution of music with us. So,
you know, Madison, when did you go from maybe like playing music with your mom is something that you did for fun at home to the idea that, no, my mom is who I should be performing with?
I think that happened whenever we were playing in the coffee shops, and like, as she mentioned, I would play during her break. But I started to write a bunch of originals, and she started to like the originals, and it started to become less of just come play during my break and let's actually go share an entire evening of music together. Then we started relying on the original music and getting rid of all the covers. And then we said, how about we have an entire night of not a single cover? Let's see if we can just entertain a bunch of folks with just original songs. And once we kind of got to that point and people were requesting originals, I was like, I think we're a duo. I think we just became one. And do you want to pursue this as an actual career of some sort? And she said, yeah. And we just put no brakes on it, pretty much.
It must be so strange to go from, you know, you've played together in like the living room at home in those quiet moments to suddenly you're on David Letterman.
Blew me out of the boat. Because we had just got back from California. We did a Grammy lunch when they had the Grammy Awards, and we did a Grammy lunch show. And I remember coming home, and I said, man, I just want to sleep for 2 days. And then my daughter came into my bedroom. She goes, Mom, you got to wake up. They want you on the David Letterman show. And I said, oh, you're lying. She goes, no, Mom, serious. And I thought, David Letterman? Ugh, I was just blown away. So,
yeah, it was incredible. I didn't have any time to really process what we were doing. It was more any time anything has happened to us, you know, on this journey, it's been a pretty big just kind of close your eyes, shut up and do it sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then we'll process everything later, maybe, if we can, you know. And so when they asked us to go do David Letterman, I mean, I've grown up watching late night shows my whole life, always thought to myself, what if I ever were able to be on that stage in any capacity, whether I'm behind a camera or in the seat or performing music. And So, I mean, in that sense, I mean, it was a real dream come true. And yeah, we were more than grateful to be a part of it.
Does doing that kind of thing as family, just does it give you some kind of touchstone of like home and or unconditional love in high stakes situations like that? Or no, is it sort of like you're still just a person on David Letterman?
I'm not sure if it does in the moment. Sometimes it kind of does because, you get on that stage and you're doing like a sound check. And then, you know, maybe after your sound check, you just look over to your left and you're looking, you're like, how did we end up here? What are we doing? You know, because, you know, we've all those years in the home, all those years coming up. And then now you're sitting on this stage and you look over and you're just like, I mean, my sister was able to come out with us on that trip as well. And even that was really cool. You know, we get off stage, we go back and she's there and we're like, what are we doing? You know, and we're just
my brother was there as well.
Yeah. It's like we're some punks from Independence. We're not supposed to be we're not supposed to be on this stage.
Well, I want to talk to you about Independence because your new song, which we heard a little bit of before, there's a music video that goes along with it, and it's got you two sitting at Clinton's, like a neighborhood place in Independence. Is that place meaningful to you?
Not necessarily. I guess it's meaningful. First of all, let me preface this by our stories are never what people want them to be.
Oh.
like you guys must have played on a porch ever since you were 3 years old. I'm like, no. No, but
because we all romanticize having our own family bands.
We do, right? And yeah, and the real, you know, the true fact of it is never is that romantic. But it's but yeah, I mean, it's meaningful in the sense of there are old memories of going there, but it just seemed more like a touchstone, I guess, meaningful in relation to the city, in the history of the city. And, you know,
just
after
being able to share Independence with your audience.
Exactly. And just something that's very that people who, you know, are from here can see it and they know it whenever they look at it. And then I had people telling me that was, you know, Harry S. Truman's first job was at Clinton's. And I didn't know that until, you know, after we shot. I was like, oh, good. That's even a little more history behind it. But but it felt really good to be shooting somewhere that was just, you know, miles away from where you live or a block away from where you live.
I'm going to get back to this new song, Childhood Goodbye. But first, I want to hear one of your other songs, because we've heard a song where, Madison, it's you singing, but I want to hear a song where it's Mama Bear singing. Mm-hmm. Let's give it a listen.
Here you go again. You want your freedom. Who am I? Keep you down. It's only right that you should play away your feelings. Listen carefully.
What inspired you about this song?
Before Madison and I became a duo, I used to sing covers all the time. And I remember learning this song, and people really responded heavily to this song. So when we were in New York, they wanted us to do a cover as well as a original. And Madison and I talked about it, and we thought this would be a great cover to do. And because there's depth to that song and the feeling and the emotion, and it comes out. And so we decided to do this song, and every time I do it, I get, you know, a great response. So,
and it's sort of like it's beautiful to be able to cover, you know, other folks' music, but you know, very rarely, you know, just it doesn't happen with us in every song we attempt to play by someone else. But where the song really just kind of becomes something else, and it really feels like it's familiar. But we've played that song on stage before, and there's people who don't know what we're doing until we get to that chorus, because it really
I had this feeling of this is familiar but I can't put my finger on
it.
And I like whenever that can happen, whenever it feels like I feel like it's much more natural and organic to the style of what we play, as a, coming from that folk duo background. And we were really happy to be able to do that at Sirius XM, and then they ended up asking for us to go record it, like in LA. So they released it on, I think, like Pace Magazine, just that song by itself, and it had nothing to do with anything really. It was sort of just a feel good, spur of the moment sort of thing.
Right. And it's something that people, especially our concerts, are more filled with original music than anything. And I think that it's something that people can kind of identify with, you know, especially that countercultural generation.
a song that people have already shared.
That's right, right.
Hippies.
Counterculture.
Yeah, yeah.
3 years have gone by since your last album, Skeleton Crew, and I'm curious about how you think you've changed or grown as musicians since then.
Well, I think, you know, it's inevitable that you'll become, you know, less green the more that you do this, but...
You say inevitable like that's a bad thing.
No, like inevitable like it's more, it's fate. No, no, I mean, you're very green whenever you first get into the business.
Right.
And, you know, obviously you're gonna learn the layout of the land more the longer you do it. And playing with bandmates was a big... that was a big thing for us because we had always just played together, and whenever it's just the two of us, we've been able to push and pull on tempo and be able to get loud or quiet however we want, and sort of expanding upon the sound has been a journey for us. And I think with the new music that we've been recording, it's already, you know, a few steps up from what we did on Skeleton Crew, which was just a lot of live tracking and not too much accompaniment. So it's definitely been a learning, you know, curve for us, but we're kind of just going through it together.
And we're also trying on this new album, there will be a lot more instrumentation and different things like that, but we try to still not steer too away from who we are, you know, so people would know that is Madison Ward and the Mama Bear. And
is that also part of filming the video in Independence, like not on tour, not somewhere too far from home?
Well, I think that was more just for, I don't know, just for the aesthetic, and then also for the meaning behind it. And I mean, and in that video, you know, there's lots of people shooting themselves from different parts of the world.
Because, photographically, like images of different people.
Correct. Under a video, you know, camera, and, you know, recording themselves doing different, you know, whether it be lip syncing or just singing along or doing anything. And we edited it all together, and it was through a site called Hit Record, which was like a collaborative artist community where people remix each other's work. And
so those weren't people who were like personal friends of yours, they're people who you found through that website?
Yeah, well, the website just kind of brings these artists together, so in a way it's almost kind of like you're friends with them, but there are many people who contribute who I have no idea who they are, and that you put the project out on the site. And it's a site made by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He started, the actor, he created it back in like, I think maybe 2007 with his brother. And I hopped on the site back in 2010 and sort of kind of gained this little relationship through the community and with him. And we brought up this music video idea of saying, hey, we want to just see if we can shoot all these people, you know, collaborating on this one video for this single that we have. And they said, we don't normally do that with people outside of Hit Record, but since you've been a member since 2010 and we know who you are, they were like, we'll do this for you.
What did it mean to you to have people, like, you see all these different faces and you do get just a feel for them being very international.
Right.
What did it mean to you to have that in this song, you know, layered over it?
It meant quite a bit, because whenever you start to first realize that you're reaching people from very far away, whether it be through a site like that or just with somebody from Australia tells you that they bought your record, it's a really heartwarming experience and very rewarding to know that that reach can go that far and that the world can become really small whenever you make music. So it definitely meant a lot to us as musicians and as people.
Well, that's so cool. Our time is up. Madison Ward and the Mama Bear, a.k.a. Ruth, it has been an honor meeting you. Thank you.
It's been great meeting you as well.
Thank you, Gina. Thanks for having us.
Their new single, you too. Yeah, their new single is Childhood Goodbye, and you can track down that video we were talking about pretty easily online. It's Childhood Goodbye from Madison Ward and the Mama Bear. You can listen back to anything you've heard or missed on this show at kcur.org/Central Standard. Tomorrow, we will be airing a special series from Invisibilia, so be sure and tune in for that. And check out KCUR's new podcast, Midwesternish. I host it, and our latest episode is all about the politics of school lunch. You can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play or wherever. That'll drop tonight. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Matt Groby. I'm Gina Kaufman.